ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's one of Australia's most baffling unsolved missing persons cases. In 2007, four people, including a five-year-old girl, vanished in Western Australia amid rumours of bizarre behaviour, cults and long-hidden secrets.
Yep, and we're trying to track them down.
I'm Dominique Bayens and I've been investigating for the new season of Expanse, The Nan Up 4. Search Expanse on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, Damien Carrick with you. This is the Law Report on ABC Radio National. In January, we spoke about some of the legal issues that can arise after a bushfire, and we touched briefly on the phenomenon of claims chasers. Queensland is a hotspot for this business model, and today you'll hear from a young mum who recently resolved a long-running dispute. First, I'm joined by two lawyers from Queensland Legal Aid. Paul Holmes, he's the Director of Disaster Relief, and his colleague, Julie Marin. Paul, what are claims chasers or disaster chasers?
So, Damien, in our experience, we see two distinct groups of claims chasers. The first are companies who approach people who've been affected by disasters in the first couple of days after the disaster, and they essentially offer to manage somebody's insurance claim and take away all the difficulties with dealing with an insurer. And then secondly, we see a group who, it's usually about 12 months after a disaster, goes around door knocking a neighbourhood that's been affected, say, by a hailstorm, offering to look at their roof. And once they find damage on the roof, offering to manage that insurance claim for them.
And there's also a third phenomenon called scam tradies. What are they?
So scam tradies are another group entirely who will go around a disaster-affected area and door-knocking saying, we can fix it without you needing to go to the insurer, so fix your damage. It's usually a driveway or a roof, and they request a deposit up front, and then they either don't do the work at all or do the work to a really poor quality and don't have the appropriate insurance.
Okay, let's come back to scam tradies a little bit later in our conversation. Let's start with these claims chasers or disaster chasers. Paul, you've been working in this field for a long time. I know you've dealt with communities affected by storms, floods, fires, earthquakes, sinkholes, cyclones. What sorts of weather events are most likely to give rise to claims chasers or disaster chasers?
So in our experience, we see them particularly following cyclones, major storms, particularly hailstorms, and floods.
And in terms of storms, I believe that there have been over 20,000 insurance claims lodged in Queensland following recent severe storms late last year.
That's correct.
Julie, where in the state are the hotspots for this sort of activity?
In our experience, I think the hotspots are anywhere that has a proclivity for hailstorms and has a lot of people affected by it.
What are the dangers of signing a contract with one of these claims chasers or disaster chasers?
So the risks with signing up to these claims management companies is in the hidden details of the contracts. Often we hear from people that they thought they were just signing a consent form for the builder to jump up on the roof and have a look, or signing an authority form for the claims manager to get in touch with their insurer. They didn't realise they were signing a contract with a really significant termination fee if they chose not to take a cash settlement from their insurer. So they get locked into using the claims management company, using the claims management company's choice of builder, and not having all the protections that come with using the insurer's repairers.
So you might have to pay a huge commission or cancellation fee or inflated repair prices as well.
That's right. So if the claims management company's builder's not doing what they said they would do, and you're thinking, oh, this isn't really how I want my claim to go anymore, the only way to get it on a different track is to pay a huge termination fee or cancellation fee, consultation fee. It's got different names. But we've seen those fees range from 10% or 20% of the estimated value of the claim, right up to the worst one I saw was 55% of the estimated value of the claim was going to be charged as a cancellation fee.
So consumers have to be on guard because, as we'll hear a little later, these services are legal, and these contracts are held by Queensland tribunals to be watertight. Julie, I do want to hear about your client with the 55% cancellation fee, but first let's hear from a young mum, we're calling her Lisa, that you advised. Her dispute was settled in August last year. The roof of her family home was damaged in a hailstorm in December 2022, and many months later, she and her husband were approached with an offer.
My husband wasn't home, and I just quickly signed it. I didn't really think, and I just thought EA is going to do the quote on the roof, and then we'll find out whether or not we want to get it fixed.
But what actually happened after you signed that contract and that inspection was done?
After that, we were told that we had to go with a certain company to fix our roof. And if we didn't choose to go with that company, we had to pay the person who did the inspection on the roof 10% of the quoted amount to fix the roof, which I was not aware of at the time that I signed the contract.
So what, a claim was put into the insurance company. What did the insurance company agree to pay that claim based on the inspection?
Yeah, they did agree to pay the claim based on the inspection.
And how much was that for?
That was just over $40,000.
Lisa, who was pregnant at the time, was frustrated that she could not get exact dates to replace the roof from the claims company. So she went with a different builder that she says was responsive and easy to deal with. When Lisa refused to pay the 10% $4,000 cancellation fee, the claims company said they would enforce the contract in QCAT, that's the Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal. At that point, Lisa approached Julie from Queensland Legal Aid, who assisted her to lodge a complaint with AFCA, the Australian Financial Complaints Authority. At that point, the claims company abandoned its claim. So why did Julie feel the $4,000 fee was unfair?
I feel like the $4,000 was way too much money for the said work that they did. I feel that they wanted money for doing little to nothing for us. They did a quote on the roof with the builder, which all builders do for free, and then you choose whether or not you go with them. So I couldn't quite pinpoint why they thought that they were owed $4,000. It just didn't match the said work that they think that they had done for us.
Would the company argue that, well, after they did the roof inspection, they then, I don't know, lodged and processed the insurance claim on your behalf?
Yeah, I think that's the argument that they would use, that they lodged the insurance claim on our behalf. But my husband had many conversations with the insurance company and was in contact with them regularly rather than this company that are trying to get the $4,000, which made us think even more that they were just builders doing a quote on the roof, because we didn't really know that they were interacting with our insurance company, apart from maybe lodging the form. But we didn't realise that until later, that that was what they actually had done.
Julie, as we've just been hearing from Lisa, you helped her lodge a complaint with AFCA, the Australian Financial Complaints Authority. Why was that the best strategy for Lisa?
So after Lisa got the QCAT application from the company, that gives her 28 days to put on a notice of defence with QCAT or risk a default judgment. But the key here is that all the claims management companies, because they're providing a financial service under an Australian Financial Services licence, they have to be members of AFCA and they have to give consumers their dispute resolution rights. That means if you have a complaint about one of these companies, you get to have it go through their internal dispute resolution process. And if that doesn't work, you get to go to AFCA. And the great thing here for Lisa was that she found us when she did, because by putting a complaint into AFCA before the QCAT proceedings went any further, it meant that the company had to put a hold on going any further with QCAT. So they couldn't go ahead and seek a judgment in QCAT until after the AFCA complaint was resolved.
And that dispute or that complaint to AFCA, that would not be around how watertight the contract is. Rather, the focus of the complaint would be whether the terms and conditions had been communicated to Lisa and whether the sort of complaints process, internal complaints process, had been made available to her.
Yes, both of those issues were part of the AFCA complaint for Lisa. that when she signed the forms, when she was door knocked, she didn't know that there was terms and conditions in there about the termination fee. But also part of that complaint was about the services that were supposed to be provided under that contract just weren't provided. Between the 4 months from when she signed it to when she got another builder to do the work, she told us she was so frustrated by trying to get an answer from the claims management company's builders about when the work would be done. But as it turned out, we never got to the bottom of why there was a reason for the delay, because once we had put the complaint in AFCA, they abandoned their claim.
So Lisa got out of having to pay that $4,000. Paul, what happens if a company seeks to enforce this sort of contract in QCAT, the Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal? What have we seen happen? There was a decision from not so long ago which upheld the company's strategy.
So we're aware that there's been QCAT decisions that have found in companies' favour. And the reasoning behind QCAT's decision has been that it's a binding contract. And they've looked at it in a very black and white lawyery way and viewed the signed contract as a signed contract. And we hold the view that you need to look behind the circumstances of how that contract was signed up and what people were told about that contract, because in effect that information induces them into signing the contract, as Julie highlighted just before.
There was a case where a woman, I think in central North Queensland, she signed a contract. She decided that, you know, the company said that they would put in a claim and then if successful would allocate a builder. This lady wanted a different builder and was told that she would have to pay 17.5% of the contract to the company, the cancellation fee. She refused to pay. QCAT ordered her to pay. She sought leave to appeal. This was dismissed. And she had to pay the 17.5% of the $60,000 insurance payout. And QCAT said this was not outrageous given the work done by the company, because they had, if you like, lodged an insurance claim on her behalf. But how much work goes into just lodging an insurance claim?
It's really interesting that QCAT thought lodging a claim is worth 17.5% of 60 grand, because actually all you really need to do to lodge an insurance claim is ring your insurer up and say, I've been affected by a cyclone, I want to lodge a claim, and that's pretty much it.
That's an expensive form to fill in, isn't it?
Very expensive form to fill in, and if you like the internet, you can actually do it online yourself. And I think that's one of our key points about all of these companies, is lodging a claim is free. If you get refused, disputing the claim with the internal dispute resolution area of your insurer is free. Lodging a complaint with AFCA is free. All of this process is entirely free, including the support Legal Aid offers customers. And so that's our big message that we want people to be aware of. This entire process is free. The only person that pays in AFCA when you lodge a complaint is actually the insurer.
So, Julie, coming back to you, you had a client who lives in central regional Queensland. Let's call her Kate. And her case was settled in December last year. Tell me what happened to Kate. She was also, like the case that Paul was just talking about, she was unsuccessful at QCAT. She was told by the Small Claims Tribunal in Queensland that she had to pay up.
That's right. So Kate lives in central regional Queensland, and there was a hailstorm in October 2021. A few months later, I think it was through targeted online ads in the community Facebook groups, there was a first contact by the claims management company. They sent a builder to her home, and she was told that she's entitled to a full roof replacement because of all the damage that was up on the roof. On that day, she had to sign two documents, just a consent form for that builder to get up on the roof and an authority form that specifically named 7 staff members of the claims management company who she was authorising to contact the insurer on her behalf. So Kate told us, and I believe her, that she was not aware of the actual contract terms, and she really wasn't aware that there would be a 19 or 20% termination fee if she decided not to go with the builder chosen by the claims management company.
So they lodged the claim for her, and she did get a payout from the insurance company, is that right?
She did, but it was not for a full roof replacement, because the insurer's builder got up there and saw that it didn't need a full roof replacement. It needed partial. And so it was for about 25% of what the claims management company had told her the claim was worth. So it wasn't until 4 or 5 months later that she was actually able to give a written revocation formal in writing to the claims management company to get them out of her life. And then after that, she accepted the cash settlement from the insurer. But the claims management company still came back for their piece of it.
Okay, so they came back for their piece of it. She refused to pay. They took her to QCAT. QCAT upheld the watertightness of the contract, and she was put on a payment plan. I understand that Kate is somebody of very kind of modest means. What happened? How were you able to help her?
So Kate didn't come to see us until about 12 months later, and she was actually after advice about some other debts, so some other legal issues. But it was in the course of talking about those other issues that we uncovered this debt that she was still paying off at $20 a fortnight until 2030. And because we're aware of these companies, we offered to have a look into this for her and have a look at what legal options she might have as to whether she's needed to keep paying this debt.
And how were you able to help her? How was this case resolved?
So we identified that this claims management company did not respond appropriately to any of the complaints that Kate had made to them before ending the contract. And so their failure to provide appropriate internal dispute resolution was the basis of a complaint that we made to AFCA. Unlike the courts and tribunals, they don't just look at what the law says and what the black and white lettering in the contract says. They look at what good industry practice in the space is, but more importantly, they look at what's fair and reasonable in the circumstances. And they assist parties, the consumer and the financial firm, to come to an agreed outcome by looking at what's relevant, what actually happened, and what's the fair and reasonable outcome here. So, of course, we always want to get things into AFCA.
So you lodged a complaint with AFCA. At that point, did the company back off, or did it actually have to go through the entire process?
Almost immediately, the company backed off and waived the debt.
Paul, what other cases have you seen?
Typically, the cases we see, and a good example is one following a hailstorm about 4 or 5 years ago, was where people engaged with a claims management company, and it actually took close to 2 years for them to get the payout from the insurer. And those of you who know Queensland well would know that there was more than one hailstorm that happened in between the damage happening and that payout finally occurring. And so that sort of delay left a young family without stable accommodation or without accommodation that protected them from hail and rain over a 2-year period. What was worse was they then had to make another claim about 2 years later, and the insurer refused the claim initially on the basis that they hadn't properly maintained the property. So there are long-term effects that can happen when claims management companies are involved that go beyond just the contract.
And Julie, you mentioned that you had a client where the contract said you'd have to pay a 55% cancellation fee. What happened in that case?
So fortunately, in that case, the client's wife came to see us within the cooling off period, and we got in touch with that claims management company very quickly and told them that contract did not exist anymore. So the client exercised their cooling off rights, and it was, I think, just so outrageous that it was obvious at the time that this was not something they wanted to be involved in anymore. But the thing is, it's not always obvious at the time until they're stuck in it. And until, you know, they're in a situation where they have to rely on this company's builder and they can't get the insurer's repairers to do it, the company's not getting back to them, their roof's not getting repaired, and this is just a part of their life for way too long.
And I guess the other really important thing too there, Julie, is we're not necessarily worried about those people that get to us, because whenever they're getting to us, the company's making
the
debt go away.
That's right. It's almost immediate. Once we get involved and we get in touch with the company, or we get a complaint into AFCA, that the company stops chasing that debt. And that's how it should work once, you know, the circumstances become known and we have a chance to resolve a dispute. But Paul's right. We are worried about the people who don't find their way to a community lawyer or a financial counsellor or somebody who knows about this and can help them, because it's those people like Kate who end up with a QCAT order that they have to pay, where if they'd gotten in to see us before, I expect the outcome would be different.
And Paul, do you have a sense of how many people are falling through the cracks here?
Look, I think there's a lot of people out there. We see them posting flyers on the car windshields of people who are showing up to insurance council forums that we attend, effectively saying, come and get the service from us, don't talk to your insurer. And so that's the problem from our perspective, that they are marketing it as a really easy, quick solution, when in reality it's not. It's costly, and it's allowing people to incur fees that they just simply don't have to incur.
Is there a spectrum here?
The reality is we only see these things when they go wrong. And we're seeing enough of them to say that there's a significant problem in this industry. We are not going to see the examples where this has worked for people, because nobody rings up Legal Aid and says, I'm having a great day, can you help?
But you would say that, generally speaking, these, at the very least, these services are totally unnecessary and an extra expense, at the very least?
At the very least, they're that. And we see lots of examples where the claim actually takes longer when a number of these companies are involved in them.
You're listening to The Law Report on ABC Radio National. Today we're talking to Paul Holmes and Julie Merrin, both from Queensland Legal Aid Disaster Relief. Paul, any other cases that you or your office have been working on which you think illustrate these issues?
We've seen a couple of cases where people have signed up maybe a day or two after a disaster. And that's probably one of the scenarios we haven't talked about a lot yet. And our Victorian colleagues have told us they've started appearing in the Victorian recovery centres as well. They will appear either outside or inside a local recovery centre offering to manage the insurance claim for people. People will sign up because following a disaster, you're under trauma and you're having to deal with 10 to 12 different people to try and get your life back in order. So if somebody's offering to help with one of them, you snatch at that opportunity. What happens then is people don't hear an awful lot from their insurer. And in this case, we actually saw one particular offer of the insurer not be taken back to the customer whose claim it was, which we found very unsettling, because when you're representing somebody as lawyers, we know any offer you get, you've got to take it back to the client and talk them through it. So that was one concern about this case. The second concern about this case was when we reviewed it, the second offer the insurer made was actually really reasonable and actually covered the damage and could have got the damage fixed to somebody. But rather than accepting that offer, from memory, it was another 3 months before that client got their money and their house was started to be fixed. The problem with that is, in that 3 month time, all of the tradies get taken up, and it actually means getting started on that work is another month or two after you get the payment. And in our view, none of that scenario is any good or in the interests of that customer and that consumer who's just wanting to get back in their house.
So they would have been much, much better off if they've just dealt with their insurance company.
That's our view, yes. Much better off dealing directly with the insurer and, if needed, getting in contact with the free services like ours and community legal centres and financial counsellors, who are free and can help them through that process if they're unsure.
Yeah, we see the approach with the door knocking during the day. So that's more likely to be older people or vulnerable people who aren't out at work at the office. That's who's home during the day. Oh gosh, you don't want to deal with your insurance company. Oh my gosh, what a nightmare. Let us do that for you. And just really trying whatever strategy works to get the signature on the authority form. We've seen them hand over scripts to the clients of what to say if your insurance company calls you. And we've seen some really interesting brochures with frequently asked questions.
Moving away from claims chasers, let's talk about scam tradies. They're a totally different phenomenon. How common are they, and what sorts of scams are you seeing?
So the typical scam tradie routes we're seeing are usually around fixing driveways that are following disasters, or fixing roofs following disasters. And what we see is they'll blow into a regional town that's been affected, door knock the entire community, pick up a number of jobs, can be anywhere between a couple and 10 to 15, ask for a deposit up front, and then skip town. And the Office of Fair Trading does a great job trying to hold people in those who are doing those things to account.
How do they do that?
I'm aware of a number of prosecutions that they've done over the years against scam tradies. And it's really important that when people see them, they let Office of Fair Trading know so that they can put a stop to it as quickly as possible, or let us know because we're regularly in contact with the Office of Fair Trading about those issues when they pop up.
And, you know, it's a way of also looking out for your vulnerable or elderly neighbours, isn't it?
Absolutely. Because they're the ones most likely, in our experience, to fall victim.
So this is kind of more of a fly-by-night cash-based industry.
Yep. You pay. Absolutely.
Here is an offer which is only available for you if you hand me over the cash immediately or within the next 24 hours. And that's sort of the scam trading scenario where people then just disappear. Finally, what do you want people to think about when they're being approached by claims chasers or disaster chasers? What would be a kind of a checklist that you'd want consumers to think about?
My checklist would be this. Firstly, take the contract away with you. If they're not going to give you a copy of a contract to take away with you, that should ring alarm bells. When they do, take it to a trusted friend or take it to a lawyer like us to get it looked over so they can explain all of the fine print to you. Secondly, ask lots of questions. And I find when people ask companies like this lots of questions, you don't get satisfactory answers. And again, that should be an alarm bell. And thirdly, I would make sure I'm approaching the insurer, because ultimately, the insurer is the one with the responsibility for fixing your house and fixing your claim. And if they're not doing the right thing, it's actually quicker to try and hold them to account than it is to go through a third party who's charging you money that you shouldn't have to pay and is not, in our experience, providing a good service when they're attempting to do it.
Paul's absolutely on the money there. I think I really want people to know that you don't have to let anybody get up on your roof to check if it's damaged, and you definitely don't have to get up there yourself. If your home has been impacted in a storm, in a flood, hailstorm, whatever it is, you put in a claim to your insurer, the insurer has to assess the claim. So there's just no need for anybody else not associated with your insurer to get up on that roof.
Lawyer Paul Holmes and lawyer Julie Marin, both from the Disaster Relief Section of Queensland Legal Aid. Thank you both for speaking to the Law Report.
Our absolute pleasure.
Thanks, Damien.
And a final word of advice from young mum Lisa.
Don't sign anything that you don't fully understand what it is, and just go through builders and companies and contractors that you have advice on from family and friends to fix things that may be broken. Don't trust people randomly walking the streets because they're not there to help.
That's the Law Report for this week. Do follow the program on ABC Listen. That way you'll get the latest podcast as soon as it becomes available. A big thanks to producer Christina Kukolia and also to audio producer Ari Gross. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk soon.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.